Chapter 81. August 1st, 1714. Does my mistress know of this? Esmond asked of Frank, as they walked along. My mother found the letter in the book, on the toilet table. She had read it ere as he had left home, Frank said. Other met her on the stairs, with her hand upon the door, trying to enter, and never left her after that till she went away. He did not think of looking at it there, nor had Martin the chance of telling him. I believe the poor devil meant no harm, though I half killed him. He thought 'twas to Beatrix's brother he was bringing the letter. Frank never said a word of reproach to me for having brought the villain amongst us. As we knocked at the door I said, when will the horses be ready? Frank pointed with his cane, they were turning the street that moment. We went up, and bade adieu to our mistress. She was in a dreadful state of agitation by this time, and that bishop was with her whose company she was so fond of. Did you tell him, my lord, says Esmond, that Beatrix was at Castlewood? The bishop blushed and stammered, colon well, says he, I thought you served the villain right, broke out Mr. Esmond, and he has lost a crown by what you told him. My mistress turned quite white. Henry, Henry, says she, comma, do not kill him. It may not be too late, says Esmond. He may not have gone to Castlewood. Pray God, it is not too late. The bishop was breaking out with some banal phrases about loyalty and the sacredness of the sovereign's person, but Esmond sternly bade him hold his tongue, burn all papers, and take care of Lady Castlewood. And in 5 minutes he and Frank were in the saddle, John Lockwood behind them, riding towards Castlewood at a rapid pace. We were just got to Alton, when who should meet us but old Lockwood, the porter from Castlewood, John's father, walking by the side of the Hexton flying coach, who slept the night at Alton. Lockwood said his young mistress had arrived at home on Wednesday night, and this morning, Friday, had dispatched him with a packet for my lady at Kensington, saying the letter was of great importance. We took the freedom to break it, while Lockwood stared with wonder, and cried out his Lord bless me's, and oh they thought it's, at the sight of his young lord, whom he had not seen these 7 years. The packet from Beatrix contained no news of importance at all. It was written in a jocular strain, affecting to make light of her captivity. She asked whether she might have leave to visit Mrs. Tusher, or to walk beyond the court and the garden wall. She gave news of the peacocks, and a fondness he had there. She bade her mother send her certain gowns and smocks by old Lockwood. She sent her duty to a certain person, if certain other persons permitted her to take such a freedom, how that, as she was not able to play cards with him, she hoped he would read good books, such as Dr. Atterbury's sermons and Dicon Bossy-like. She was going to read good books. She thought her pretty mama would like to know she was not crying her eyes out. Who is in the house besides you, Lockwood? Says the colonel. There be the laundry maid, and the kitchen maid, Madam Beatrix's maid, the man from London, and that be all, and he sleepeth in my lodge away from the maids, says old Lockwood. Esmond scribbled a line with a pencil on the note, giving it to the old man, and bidding him go on to his lady. We knew why Beatrix had been so dutiful on a sudden, and why she spoke of Eichen Bossy-like. She writ this letter to put the prince on the scent, and the porter out of the way. We have a fine moonlight night for riding on, says Esmond. Frank, we may reach Castlewood in time yet. All the way along they made inquiries at the post-houses, when a tall young gentleman in a grey suit, with a light brown periwig, just the color of my lord's, had been seen to pass. He had set off at 6 that morning, and we at 3 in the afternoon. He rode almost as quickly as we had done. He was 7 hours ahead of us still, when we reached the last stage. We rode over Castlewood Downs before the breaking of dawn. We passed the very spot, where the car was upset 14 years since, and Mohun lay. The village was not up yet, nor the forge lighted, as we rode through it, passing by the elms, where the rooks were still roosting, and by the church, and over the bridge. We got off our horses at the bridge, and walked up to the gate. If she is safe, says Frank, trembling, and his honest eyes filling with tears, a silver statue to Our Lady. He was going to rattle at the great iron knocker on the oak gate, but Esmond stopped his kinsman's hand. He had his own fears, his own hopes, his own despairs and griefs too, but he spoke not a word of these to his companion, or showed any signs of emotion. He went and tapped at the little window at the porter's lodge, gently, but repeatedly, until the man came to the bars. "Who's there?" says he, looking out. It was the servant from Kensington. "My Lord Castlewood and Colonel Esmond," we said, from below. "Open the gate, and let us in without any noise." "My Lord Castlewood?" says the other. "My Lord's here, and in bed." "Open, DNU," says Castlewood, with a curse. "I shall open to no one," says the man, shutting the glass window as Frank drew a pistol. He would have fired at the porter, but Esmond again held his hand. "There are more ways than one," says he, "of entering such a great house as this." Frank grumbled that the west gate was half a mile round. "But I know of a way that's not 100 yards off," says Mr. Esmond, and leading his kinsman close along the wall, and by the shrubs which had now grown thick on what had been an old moat about the house, they came to the buttress, at the side of which the little window was, which was Father Holt's private door. Esmond climbed up to this easily, broke a pane that had been mended, and touched the spring inside, and the two gentlemen passed in that way, treading as lightly as they could, and so going through the passage into the court, over which the dawn was now reddening, and where the fountain plashed in the silence. They sped instantly to the porter's lodge, where the fellow had not fastened his door that led into the court, and pistol in hand came upon the terrified wretch, and bade him be silent. Then they asked him. Esmond's head reeled, and he almost fell as he spoke, when Lord Castlewood had arrived. He said on the previous evening, about 8 of the clock. And he what then? His lordship's up with his sister. Did the man wait? Yes, he and my lady's maid both waited. The other servants made the supper, and there was no wine, and they could give his lordship but milk, at which he grumbled, and Madame Beatrix kept Miss Lucy always in the room with her. And there being a bed across the court in the chaplain's room, as he had arranged, my lord was to sleep there. Madame Beatrix had come downstairs laughing with the maids, and had locked herself in, and my lord had stood for a while talking to her through the door, and she laughing at him. And then he paced the court a while, and she came again to the upper window, and my lord implored her to come down and walk in the room, but she would not, and laughed at him again, and shut the window, and so my lord, uttering what seemed curses, but in a foreign language, went to the chaplain's room to bed. Was this all? LL, the man swore upon his honor, all as he hoped to be saved. Top, there was one thing more. My lord, on arriving, and once or twice during supper, did kiss his sister, as was natural, and she kissed him. At this Esmond ground his teeth with rage, and well nigh throttled the amazed miscreant who was speaking, whereas Castlewood, seizing hold of his cousin's hand, burst into a great fit of laughter. "If it amuses thee," says Esmond in French, "that your sister should be exchanging of kisses with a stranger, I fear poor Beatrix will give thee plenty of sport." Esmond darkly thought how Hamilton, Ashburnham, had before been masters of those roses that the young prince's lips were now feeding on. He sickened at that notion. Her cheek was desecrated, her beauty tarnished. Shame and honor stood between it and him. The love was dead within him. Had she a crown to bring him with her love, he felt that both would degrade him. But this wrath against Beatrix did not lessen the angry feelings of the colonel against the man who had been the occasion, if not the cause, of the evil. Frank sat down on a stone bench in the courtyard, and fairly fell asleep, while Esmond paced up and down the court, debating what should ensue. What mattered how much, or how little, had passed between the prince and the poor faithless girl? They were arrived in time perhaps to rescue her person, but not her mind. Had she not instigated the young prince to come to her, suborned servants, dismissed others, so that she might communicate with him. The treacherous heart within her had surrendered, though the place was safe. And it was to win this, that he had given a life's struggle and devotion. This, that she was ready to give away for the bribe of a coronet, or a wink of the prince's eye. When he had thought his thoughts out, he shook up poor Frank from his sleep, who rose yawning, and said he had been dreaming of Clotilda. "Who must back me," says Esmond, "in what I am going to do? I have been thinking that yonder scoundrel may have been instructed to tell that story, and that the whole of it may be a lie. If it be, we shall find it out from the gentleman who is asleep yonder. See if the door leading to my lady's rooms," so we called the rooms at the northwest angle of the house, "see if the door is barred as he saith." We tried. It was indeed as the lackey had said, closed within. "It may have been opened and shut afterwards," says poor Esmond, "the foundress of our family, let our ancestor in that way. What will you do, Harry, if what that fellow saith should turn out untrue?" The young man looked scared and frightened into his kinsman's face. I dare say it wore no very pleasant expression. "Let us first go see whether the two stories agree," says Esmond, and went in at the passage, and opened the door into what had been his own chamber now for well nigh 25 years. A candle was still burning, and the prince asleep dressed on the bed. Esmond did not care for making a noise. The prince started up in his bed, seeing two men in his chamber. "Uis la," says he, and took a pistol from under his pillow. "It is the Marquis of Esmond," says the colonel, "come to welcome his majesty to his house of Castlewood, and to report of what hath happened in London. Pursuant to the king's orders, I passed the night before last, after leaving his majesty, in waiting upon the friends of the king. It is a pity that his majesty's desire to see the country, and to visit our poor house should have caused the king to quit London without notice yesterday, when the opportunity happened which in all human probability may not occur again. And had the king not chosen to ride to Castlewood, the Prince of Wales might have slept at St. James. Steeth, gentlemen," says the prince, starting off his bed, whereon he was lying in his clothes, "the doctor was with me yesterday morning, and after watching by my sister all night, told me I might not hope to see the queen. It would have been otherwise," says Esmond with another bow, "as, by this time, the queen may be dead in spite of the doctor." The council was met, a new treasurer was appointed, the troops were devoted to the king's cause, and 50 loyal gentlemen of the greatest names of this kingdom were assembled to accompany the Prince of Wales, who might have been the acknowledged heir of the throne, or the possessor of it by this time, had your majesty not chosen to take the air. We were ready. There was only one person that failed us, your majesty's gracious Morbleu. "Monsieur, you give me too much majesty," said the prince, who had now risen up and seemed to be looking to one of us to help him to his coat. But neither stirred. "We shall take care," says Esmond, "not much oftener to offend in that particular." "What mean you, my lord?" says the prince, and muttered something about a get-a pens, which Esmond caught up. "The snare, sir," said he, "was not of our laying. It is not we that invited you. We came to avenge, and not to compass, the dishonor of our family." "Dishonor? Morbleu, there has been no dishonor," says the prince, turning scarlet, "only a little harmless playing. That was meant to end seriously." "I swear," the prince broke out impetuously, "upon the honor of a gentleman, my lords, that we arrived in time. No wrong hath been done, Frank," says Colonel Esmond, turning round to young Castlewood, who stood at the door as the talk was going on. "Here is a paper whereon his majesty has deigned to commence some verses in honor, or dishonor, of Beatrix. Here is Madame and Flam, apostrophe cruel and rebel, apostrophe, and amour and jour in the royal writing and spelling. Had the gracious lover been happy, he had not passed his time in sighing. In fact, and actually as he was speaking, Esmond cast his eyes down towards the table, and saw a paper on which my young prince had been scrawling a madrigal, that was to finish his charmer on the morrow. "Sir," says the prince, burning with rage, he had assumed his royal coat unassisted by this time, "did I come here to receive insults?" "To confer them, may it please your majesty," says the colonel, with a very low bow, "and the gentlemen of our family are come to thank you." "Malediction," says the young man, tears starting into his eyes with helpless rage and mortification. "Hat will you with me, gentlemen?" "If your majesty will please to enter the next apartment," says Esmond, preserving his grave tone, "I have some papers there which I would gladly submit to you, and by your permission I will lead the way," and, taking the taper up, and backing before the prince with very great ceremony, Mr. Esmond passed into the little chaplain's room, through which we had just entered into the house. "Please to set a chair for his majesty, Frank," says the colonel to his companion, who wondered almost as much at this scene, and was as much puzzled by it, as the other actor in it. Then going to the crypt over the mantelpiece, the colonel opened it, and drew thence the papers which so long had lain there. "Here, may it please your majesty," says he, "is the patent of Marquis sent over by your royal father at St. Germain's to Viscount Castlewood, my father. Here is the witnessed certificate of my father's marriage to my mother, and of my birth and christening. I was christened of that religion, of which your sainted sire gave all. Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.